Hey, this is Christy Scott
and Jackie Ball,
and we are here for another episode of People's Issues Podcast, number 5, Being Seen.
Being Seen, numero cinco.
Yes.
So Being Seen is the topic that we kind of landed on for today. I don't know if you all had a chance to listen to the episode before this one, episode 4, Body Image with Janet. If you haven't, you have to go give it a listen because Janet was fantastic and made some excellent points.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that came up in those conversations has made us reflect further, which led us into this episode of Being Seen.
Yes. So what got me when I was listening to it was when she was talking about Janet's jugs and her teacher blaming her.
Yeah. For a little bit of background, we were discussing developing as a young teenage girl. And for a lot of us, we hit puberty around 12 or 13. And puberty does include growing breasts. And some of us have very large breasts at a very young age. And Janet and I were discussing what that's like. And she was saying that she was getting harassment from some of the boys in the class. And when she brought it to the teacher basically told her to not distract the boys.
Yes, which is something she can't change or do anything about, and she didn't feel comfortable talking to her parents about it. And so what I was thinking about with that is she was being seen in a way that she could not possibly control. And that just kind of led into different points in my life and thoughts I had about what it's like to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And what does being seen mean to me personally? And growing up for me, it was hard to be seen sometimes because that meant that I could potentially be the target of anger. And when I was first doing my therapy in my 20s, early 20s, I would have problems with people just being angry in the same room with me because I thought they were going to look at me and decide that I needed to be yelled at, which I've since remedied. But it's hard to get that out of your head of, like, you know, if you've grown up with a certain idea of, like, minimize yourself, make sure no one can see you, because being seen is dangerous. Maybe not necessarily physically dangerous, but just if you're going to be the target of an attack of any kind, so you minimize yourself. And I think that that's very true of women in general, and I'm sure minorities go through the same thing, or just not being seen when you should be seen.
Being overlooked.
Or being overlooked, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because it's like, it's interesting because I think that, you know, every person in this world wants to be seen and they want to be, you know, acknowledged. But as women, there are times where we have no control over the attention that we're getting, and we do wish that we could somehow be invisible.
Yeah.
And I guess the most obvious is the catcalling and, you know, not being able to help that. Or if you're a woman with any breasts and you've got any cleavage out, it's automatically sexualized, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and just your whole personhood is sexualized in a lot of ways it's hard. Like, I want to see myself as neutral, and growing up, I saw myself as very neutral. Like, I never thought of, oh, I'm a girl, until I got to a certain age where it was like, oh, like, I'm being treated much differently. And I had a very good contrast because I have an older and a younger brother, so I could tell very clearly, like, this is why are they treating my brothers differently, and the only thing I could come up with was gender.
Yeah.
Gender.
Yeah, you know? That's interesting. That's something that I didn't really have to, I guess I really didn't have that light kind of to shine in my life growing up. I grew up with my mother, and then I have an older sister. And growing up, I had two younger sisters. I now have another sister, another brother. Longer story, but at that time growing up, it was all girls. I guess there really wasn't that comparison then to my brother being treated in a different way than I was. But you do learn very early on, because it does happen quite soon, that you do become sexualized by men and by boys. I think that you learn very early on how to, like, laugh it off, and you get older and you find yourself doing it and you find yourself laughing it off, and you're kind of like, why am I laughing with them in this? Because I do feel uncomfortable and it's not appropriate, but it's been the best way to handle it so far, and it keeps you out of the most danger, and it makes you seem like an easygoing, cool chick who can take a joke and isn't going to, like, get all offended. Like, you don't have to, like, you know, I'm not trying to like have sex with you. I'm just giving you a compliment. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, it's the easiest way to get out of it. Like for me, it's if I have attention on me that I don't want necessarily, the easiest way to get rid of it is to just laugh and like smile and just get out of the situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so maybe they want to talk about it more. If you were to confront someone, it would bring more attention to you. Then they would want to talk about it more. And it's like, this is what's easiest for me because I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. So I'm going to minimize.
Yeah. And then it's like you have to take that moment of, if I don't just laugh it off and if I decide, you know what, I'm going to educate this man on what he's doing and how this isn't like really appropriate. And I don't know if I know you and I know that this isn't what you're meaning by this. And I know that you're a great person, but that came off inappropriate. It's rude. It's not okay to joke with me like that. And I don't know if you joke with other people like that, but as someone that knows you, I'm like letting you know maybe you shouldn't do that. And it's tough because sometimes you feel more comfortable doing it with people that you, if I know you, I feel more comfortable doing it. But like when you, I don't know what anybody's reaction is going to be. And like worst case scenario for a woman isn't just like getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't even just getting killed. You know, yeah, like
there's things that are worse than that.
There's things that are worse than that. And so it is tricky. And I know minorities feel this as well, where it's like, you know, it's not my job to let every white person to teach you how to be a decent human being. Just be a decent human being. And so it's frustrating because it's falling on the people that are having to endure the ignorance. It's like you have to fix it. And then you might get attacked for it. And
yeah, I mean, one of the best pieces of advice I'd gotten about being white, and I had a supervisor who was African American, and he told me, this was maybe like 7-8 years ago, that the best way to get the word out and to do something and be an ally is to talk to other white people and just be like, hey, this isn't okay.
Inform them. Please let them know as
like
well.
I'm in this space and this is happening and you're doing something that isn't okay.
Yeah.
Like my duty is to do this, to minimize or to at least try and get rid of this type of, you know, racism or whatever else is going on.
Yeah. I think we've hit on that before. The idea that you don't have to be the minority that is having the disparaging remarks said about to step up and say, hey. And it is important for men to step in and defend women, you know, and it, like that Gillette commercial.
Yes.
I don't even know if I need to bring that up because it's the Gillette commercial that went around and it was talking about toxic masculinity, which we're actually going to get into on a later episode. We're going to go into that. We're going to have a male guest on to discuss that. So I don't want to go too far off the rails in that. But in the Gillette commercial, there is this one part where there is a guy that's about to like go creeping on a woman and a dude like kind of swoops in. It's like, hey man, not cool. And like more of those moments. And like, if you're the kind of person that's like, I don't act that way, I don't behave that way. So like, how very dare you like say that men behave this way? Well, no, you may not, but this is, I mean, how much money went into making this commercial? You know, like they obviously thought it, and if you want to be like, well, this is, you know, a company making money off of this or whatever, it's like, well, they are still delivering a really great message. They had the wherewithal to know that this message was worth spending the money on, and it is a good marketing move. So that means that there are enough people out there that do believe this and do feel this way and want this change to happen. And so if you're not seeing it in your world, well, like, where do you live? That's awesome. But just know that you might one day come across a situation where that's happening, and it would be really cool if you could step in. And
it's a step in a good direction of showing that there are two actors, or there is someone like the man is part of the equation.
Yeah. It's not on just the women. We've been taught, we know how to like protect ourselves. And it's so sad because since that's the way that it's been, having to put any of the responsibility on the other party.
Yeah.
It makes me think of just you hear, you know, you have people that talk about, oh, well, she went up to his hotel room. You know, what did she expect? And that's once again falling on the woman. Well, what did you expect? It's in our judgment. It's our judgment call. So we should know that this man's a predator. We're not going to care or look at the fact that this man's, we're not going to address that. He's a predator. Maybe that's the problem. The problem isn't me going up to his room. The problem is that I go up to his room, he tries to have sex with me, I say no, and that bothers him and he takes it anyway because he feels like he's entitled to it.
Or yeah, I mean, or, you know, going into the R. Kelly stuff that's been going on.
Yes.
With having a 14 or 15 year old girl that's very, very impressionable or just doesn't have the skills, or she can't legally consent anyway. Like that's
she can't.
That's, you know, number one.
And sorry, go on.
Yeah. So he's a grown man and the woman is 14, 15, and then also preying on young black women who studies or whatnot have been showing that we perceive black women as more mature than they are, even when they're children.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the idea of being seen, you know, a predator picks out people who don't feel seen or they aren't being as protected as someone else. And so they see that other people aren't seeing them. So they try to find the victim that can be the most removed from whatever situation without people noticing. So
well, yeah, well, that's because especially in the R. Kelly case specifically, since he was housing them, right? They were all his place.
Yeah.
You're definitely going to try to pick up on women that aren't being seen because who's going to notice? And it's just sad. It's interesting you talk about how we do look at African-American girls, like we see a 13, 14-year-old girl. It does happen with Caucasian women as well, but we definitely put them in the women ranks a lot more. And you think about young girls that are living on the streets that are maybe forced into prostitution as, you know, a way of surviving. And then we pick up these teenage girls off the street and where they're not looked at like victims. They're looked at like criminals.
Yeah, with the Santoya Brown stuff that was in the news where she killed a guy who had bought her for sex.
My gosh, yeah.
And she got clemency, which is great.
Yeah, it took long. I mean, it's a process, I know, and thank God she at least got it. But
yeah, she's the victim in that situation.
Yeah, this man bought her, continually raped her, and then she killed him. And even if it is premeditated, even if she planned the murder out, it still is self-defense because if she would not have done that,
she would have been continually...
She would have continually been abused.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, just all, but how hard she had to fight. And if that was a young white girl and a black man had bought her...
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Would it have gone to where it went to? Would she have even been charged to begin with? Would clemency have even been necessary? That's the thing with the R. Kelly thing. If these were a bunch of white girls... Now, if it was a white man doing it to white girls, that's a whole other story. But if it's a black man hurting white girls, oh, you better believe this country's going to be all over it.
Yeah.
And that's like with when kids go missing and, you know, those stories that get picked up for all of that. You see, it's always a, you know, pretty young blonde white girl. You don't see the, especially if you're from a family that has issues. Now, all of a sudden, you don't matter.
Yeah.
Your pain doesn't matter. What you suffered, you being a victim, doesn't matter because of where you come from and what you look like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's sad when it happens to anybody. It's just
right. Yeah, no, it's horrible when it happens.
And act like it doesn't, that there isn't, it's not disproportionate. And that the way that we care about it, that but that all goes to being seen. How are we seen walking through this world? And, you know, I say, you know, I don't care what anybody, what other people think of me is none of my business. And, you know, I know myself and that's like the most important thing, but I'm not so dumb as to think that people don't have perceptions of me and that someone's perception of me, even though that it may not be fact, it doesn't exist and that it doesn't affect the way that I walk through this world. You know, being half Hispanic, presenting fully white, being seen in this world, I'm a white girl with all the white privileges that come along with that. You know, I go and I work a cater waiter gig. True story, this happened. I go to work a cater waiter gig and I go to, hi, I'm going up to this floor to work this. And okay, go right on up. And then I hear, hey, Jackie. I look over. It's three African-American women that I've worked with before. And they're like, are they letting you up? I'm like, yeah, going on up. And they look at the security guard. And they're like, yeah, we're with her. And the security guard's like, oh, they're with you? And I was like, yeah, we're all here for the same gig. We're going to the floor. I don't think anything of it. We get in the elevator. I literally just had to walk up, say I was here for an event, say what floor I was going to, didn't even get to finish, and they were pointing me on my way. I get in the elevator with the three African-American women, and the same security guard wanted their IDs. They wanted the contact name and info. They wanted them to call and get the contact person there. And the way this company works, like, it's not always easy to get a hold of the people. So they're trying to call, but they're not getting an answer. Ran them through the ringer. And then I come up. They don't even ask for my ID.
Yeah.
And we get in that elevator and these women tell me that. And it's like, God, wow. And I'm not going to, you know, I've got a big old smile and I'm a, you know, nice person. And I can sit there and try to be like, well, no, it's not that. It's just that, you know, I came up and, you know, I'm just a little more cheerful than y'all. And so, you know, it kind of opens doors for me. No, you look white. People, yeah. you got a kind face. Everybody asks you for directions. You know, like, this is a privilege you have.
And it, just as a white person and hearing what other white people say about it, like, it just, talk to any person who is not white and your idea of, oh, well, it's this or that, or the other thing. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, well, you would behave the same way if it was this person, or, you know, this is
you'd
what
like
this
means. You'd like to think
that. You can think that, and you can think like, oh, well, it's more fair than it seems to be, but you're wrong. Like, talk to anyone who isn't in your little white bubble, yeah. And you will see that you are wrong. Like, yeah. And to not even, like, acknowledge that, I think is well, it's being ignorant, but also, like, you need to know that, like, sometimes ignorance can hurt, and it's a lot easier, it's a nice, better look of the world to think like, oh, everybody can be you know, treated just as nicely as anyone else. But you have to get out of that, because it's not true.
Absolutely.
And
not,
and you may have had that privilege of living in a world where everyone is great to each other and whatever, and you never had to deal with being prejudiced against, but that's not reality for most people.
Mm-hmm.
So that does always get to me a little bit when I'm like starting to tell a story of something and then someone will be like, well, you know, I know where you're going with this, but it's definitely not because they were black, or it's definitely not. And I'm like, well, actually, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. Like,
and sometimes we don't even realize that that is what it is. And you have to, it's just like with our emotions. Like, if something happens and I'm angry all of a sudden and I have to stop and I can't just say, I'm angry, that's it, boom, done. That's the facts. You know, these people are like, that's not what I meant. That's not what it is. Boom, done. So they have to take a second and you have to like dig a little bit deeper and you have to ask, you know, you sit there and say, oh, I would have done it if it was a white person or a black person.
Yeah. And, you know, it's easier if you're talking to someone else and they're, it's easier to say, oh, well, Christy's just being like super like alarmist about everything. Mm-hmm. That's so much easier than saying like, wait, maybe my view of other people is very skewed because yes. I've had such a privileged life.
Yes.
That's so much harder to say.
And that's the thing, is because people feel like once they put the word privilege mm-hmm. as a description of them, it discounts any hardship they've gone through. And that's just not true.
No.
That's just not true. You have to, it's like I had one heck of a time and what I went through in my childhood, but I know where my privileges are.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest about that and be grateful for them. And, you know, going back to what you were saying about ignorance, it's like, yeah, ignorance is bliss. But ignorance, like the saying ignorance is bliss, it's ignorance is blissful for the ignorant.
Yeah. It's not for everyone around you. Yeah. It could be extremely painful. Your ignorance can be very painful.
And we have to understand that it is complicated. It is layered. It takes a while to reverse engineer something. We've built mm-hmm. this way of thinking. A lot went into it. A lot of cogs. There's a lot of turning parts. So if we want to figure out how to rebuild it, we've got to go bit by bit, reverse engineer this, look at where it started. And we have to understand that when it comes to minorities and women, there was a time in this country where, in this world, where people fought tooth and nail to make sure we weren't educated and that we couldn't vote.
Yeah.
And it was not that long ago. I mean, women were having to starve themselves to get the right to vote. Men wanted so badly for women to not vote.
Yeah.
They fought it.
It's interesting because I was looking at this thing on, I think it's called Long Reads. It's just a very nice reading website if you're ever interested in that thing.
Nice, yeah, long read.
To make myself sound literary.
Yeah, she's very literary.
And it was talking about like the scold in different times in history. A scold, that's S-C-O-L-D. And they would actually have like mouthpieces and head gear that they would put. Like if a woman... I'm talking like maybe 1700s, 1800s. If a woman in a village was just like not talking to, they were talking too much or too vocal or whatever, they literally had devices that they would like put over the woman's head and they would like put her in the middle of town and just like starve her for a day or two. Yeah. I mean, it's just terrifying to me. Like I want to say like, well, if I lived in that time, I wouldn't let anyone tell me what to do. It's like, well, no, you would have been socialized into that. And and you would try your hardest. But if somebody, I mean, if somebody put like a piece of metal in my mouth and like sat me in the middle of town and told me that I was horrible, like I would be like, well, damn, I don't want to say anything. Like, that's terrifying.
And there's a reason why when a woman speaks up or gets passionate about something, it's called being shrill or screeching or getting hysterical, because that's the way that it was described. Anytime we wanted to bother our pretty little heads with matters of state, with matters of finance, with matters of property, you know.
And Trump saying like, oh, it's a witch hunt is actually very derogatory, because what is an actual witch hunt?
Going after women who speak their minds or who
it's like you're using something that was like very feminine to say that they're going at you unjustly. And it's like what are and you that's, even and you don't have no you have no idea what you're talking about. That's what it means. That's what it means.
I'm sorry, we got
we got there. Yeah,
I know, you bring up we haven't dropped the T word yet. That was the first
the T word.
Trump. You know, we get on this, and of course, Trump is Trump, and it's all out there, and you hear it everywhere, and we're going to talk about that. And, you know, it's like, we want to talk about everything, and we want to talk about politics, but I don't need to talk about him. What?
Yeah, he's a symptom,
He's a symptom of everything that we're talking about on this show, opening up discussions, reaching across the table, not leading into hate, open dialogue, discourse, people that don't agree coming to the table and having to compromise or just having an understanding, compassion, love, all of that. He's a symptom of the disease that we're trying to fight.
Yeah.
So let's not even worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because it's
and
a time
also,
in the society. We're not one person. We're a collective group of people. I've said this, when I hear about someone's actions or I see what someone is doing, I try to first and foremost see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Why is that where you're at? And if I'm so blown away and think it's so like disgusting and atrocious, like that's even more reason for me to need to like see why you're doing that. I need to have an understanding. What's going on that you're that upset? Like, what can we do?
Yeah. And you should notice when these things are going on. Yeah. And I know it's hard to notice it. Yeah. And that's actually what I kind of struggle with myself, of like, how much am I just witnessing and not doing anything about? Like, I don't know. Am I doing as much as I could possibly be doing? I don't know that the answer to that.
It's tough. And stepping up and stepping in isn't the easiest thing. And as, you know, women, we normally aren't exactly encouraged to do that. Sometimes, you know, I hate to like sound like a broken record on this, but you know, there's a lot of times they don't encourage women to like speak up. And so, and to feel intimidated and go back to the women crying episode and like feeling like, am I going to be able to handle this? Or am I just going to like turn into like a puddling mess? But knowing that we have to step up. But I think women, we do know that. And you look at what happened in the midterm elections and you look at how many women have said, you know what, F it, I'm doing it. And it doesn't matter how old I am or, because I do think, I look at, I don't know how we got on politics, but I look at politics sometimes and I do think like, oh gosh, like too bad I didn't go to school for political science, because is that the only way into it? And I think we're starting to have an understanding that maybe that's not it. You know, you didn't need to major in it. You didn't need to know that you wanted to do politics. You know, so you see a lot of these people, like their parents were in it, or, you know, their aunts or uncles are in politics. So it's like a part of their family. And so you're raised up knowing about these things, and you have other people. I wasn't raised up on politics. I wasn't. I mean, now my dad is a Democrat because he's a union man. You know, he's an IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. So, you know, as a union man, working man down in Texas, you know, he's going to be a Democrat. But like I said, I grew up with my mom. And the last thing on my mom's mind was politics. My mom was thinking about surviving. She was thinking about feeding the kids. She was thinking about juggling her three jobs. You know, she wasn't complaining about that kind of stuff. So some of us have a learning curve on that, having to figure these things out. And it makes me think about, you were talking about Tina Fey and imposter syndrome and feeling like, am I educated enough to be in this space talking about this? Yes. Do I have the right to give my opinions on this? Because no, I'm not a lawyer. No, I don't have a degree in this, but I know what it's like to be a human, and I know what it's like to walk around in this world, and I know all the different people that I've met, and I have some thoughts and ideas on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And to frame that a little bit, earlier, Jackie and I were talking about Bossy Pants by Tina Fey, and she talks about imposter syndrome, like just feeling like she doesn't belong where she is. and how that also kind of goes with wanting to be seen or how you're seen, mm-hmm. And just thinking like, I'm not qualified to be here. I'm not good enough to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women go through that. I'm sure other people other than women go through it.
Sure. Of course.
But it is something that like, I know I've felt, and it just is, it's hard. It's hard to say like, hey, I belong here. This is where I'm supposed to be.
I was listening, it must have been NPR or something, but they were interviewing a woman who wrote a book. She went around and talked to many young African-American millennials and kind of talking to them like what success looks like to them across the board. And they talk about that and just like the privilege of being able to go to college. Because mm-hmm. there's, you know, you may do great and have all these great grades and this, that, and the other, but it's like, well, I'm not even going to be shooting for that because I know my parents can't afford to pay for it, or we can't get the loans for it. So that's not even a possibility. And then you have people, you know, the people that they had talked to, there's also others who do make it into the college set, and then just feeling so much outside, you know, and not feeling like a part of it, and feeling like, I guess kind of what Tina Fey is talking about. I thought that was really interesting and how like that even works against them. And then having the guilt of the longer I'm in college, the longer it takes me to get a job. So that's the longer it's going to be till I start making money, till I start helping out my family, and the burden and the guilt that is felt. So just to make it through college is an accomplishment in a whole other different sense. And once again, to like young Caucasian people, it doesn't mean that you didn't, you know, have to like work through college or anything like that, but what other burdens do you have sitting on you, or that you don't have sitting on you, that you don't even realize could be weights on your shoulders that you don't have to worry about? And this is very, very random, but I was watching Top Chef, and there was this contestant who was, you know, talking about, you know, she went to college for one thing, and then afterwards had decided, you know, I just really want to be a chef. I just really want to follow that passion. And so, you know, she's talking to her grandfather, and her grandfather just really supported her, and he believed in her. And so, you know, he went ahead, because she had already gone through her college fund. So he footed the bill, like, for her to go back to culinary school and become a chef. And like, this is like her picking herself up by the bootstrap story. And it's like, all I hear is you had a college fund and then your grandpa paid for your second round of culinary school. That is like, and you're like, but I made it through.
I mean, I guess
you did. And that is hard work. But we have to remember, and I always say, I guess what's gotten me through life is I've always reminded myself it can be worse. If I'm not dead, it can be worse.
Yeah.
So if someone comes and tells me that their journey was worse, I don't think that it means that my journey wasn't bad. It just means that there's, I didn't even have to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'm rambling. I'm so sorry.
No. I see what you're saying. And it's hard to have that thought process going of like, someone can be very, very sincere and feel like they have gone through so much,
and they have.
I mean, I've always thought it's like, if you've never experienced a toothache before and you have a toothache and it's just like a tiny little thing and you're screaming, but there's someone who's had like both their arms amputated, like, to you maybe that pain is the same. But I mean, it's a hard thing because you're not being ignorant on purpose. Obviously ignorance isn't a purposeful thing. I mean, I think you can purposely hide yourself and become more ignorant, but I think the initial ignorance is just, that's what it is. It's ignorance.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to bridge that gap sometimes of like, how does a person who's had limbs amputated talk to the person who's like just had a toothache and that's the only pain they've ever experienced?
You just talk open and honestly about it and hope that that other person, I've actually had this conversation many times.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah, because I guess we'll get a little personal here. I grew up with my mother in Corpus Christi, and a lot of the kids that I grew up around, they could relate to what I was going through. And, you know, I was sexually molested as a child by my uncle and by my grandfather. And there were times where I would share this with other people, and they had been through it as well. And there was like a lot of bonding that we had, and a lot of understanding that we had. They understood, we all understood rent, we all understood bills, we all understood evictions, we all understood food stamps, and, you know, like, it was just a part of our lives. We took care of ourselves. You know, our parents were working tons of jobs. There was an understanding for the struggle that we went through and how just getting to school was a whole other thing. Then in 10th grade, I moved in with my dad, and I moved to Orangeville, Texas. And it's a very small Caucasian town. And there's different struggles there, you know, and families have gone through different things. But it's not quite, it's different. And they never knew that there could be different than where they lived and where they were at. And at first it was really frustrating when I'm listening to this person be so upset that their straightener wasn't working. And you want to like, knee reaction, be like, shut up. Like, you have a straightener. Start there. Do you know what I mean? Like, think about what you're complaining about. You have one. Not like it even matters, but like some people, you know, like it's a, and so initially it does feel frustrating, but you take that time to realize, oh, here's someone that has been fortunate and has been blessed. Let me just kind of talk to them and enlighten them and show them a different side of the world and help them to help their heart grow a little bit and to see what other people can go through. Yeah. Because sometimes they don't know that. And I just try to look kindly upon everybody and think that way because.
Yeah. That's a good philosophy because I, like some of the stuff I've been through, like I don't want other people to go through that. So I could see how it would be hard sometimes if I'm talking to someone and they're innocent in certain ways. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to just be like, yeah, listen, so this is actually what can happen to you, you know?
Yeah.
And it's.
And you have to, and I have to remember that I learned that lesson way too early.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like if, you know, people, oh my God, I can't believe that this person's being accused of sexual assault. I'm devastated. I loved this person. He's such a great guy. I'm like, if I can accept the fact that my grandfather is a pedophile, then I can accept the fact that R. Kelly is a piece of shit. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
it's not, like, oh,
it's not as difficult yeah. for me because it's something I had to come to terms with a long time ago. I grew up knowing that cities look different. States look different. People look different. There's different mindsets, and that everybody in your area thinks and feels one way. And then you go somewhere else and everyone in that area thinks and feels another way. And so it's like this bridge. And I just was fortunate enough. Some people might look at it like, oh, I'm so sorry for everything you've gone through. But it's like, I was fortunate enough to get that lesson early on. And I had to learn that you have to be patient with other people because
yeah.
they're fortunate that they haven't had to learn that lesson yet.
Yeah. And I do. And maybe this is like the female in me of like, I don't want to burden them, and it's not their job to know like everything that's going on with me, and
yeah.
like just wanting to be there for them. And sometimes that's hard though when.
Well, yeah, and
yeah.
it's not trying to like be a one up moment, like you're having a moment.
Right.
It's like, oh, really? Well, guess what I've been through.
Right. Exactly.
And
yeah.
I just always try to say like it could always be worse, you know. But it's a balance that I've had to work through because how much did I minimize what
mm-hmm.
I went through? And it's a great way to help me cope with it because if I minimize, okay, well, I was molested. I wasn't raped. I wasn't sold as a sex slave. I wasn't killed. You know, this is okay. I am fine. This is minimal. And it helped me survive, but I don't need to discount what I went through. So it's a balance, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
how you have to, like, go through it. But
yeah, I mean, it's something to think on.
Oh, no, yeah, for sure. There are other situations. I will never know what it is like to walk through this world as an African-American woman. I'll never know what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell me, but that's the thing. I want to hear about it. I want to know what that's like so that I can have an understanding. And the biggest thing is, what's difficult is, since the scales are so unbalanced and since the perception of color and gender is so set, the active work we have to do is so great. And it may seem like it's being PC or, you know, snowflakey or so sensitive. And that's the way it's always been. And it's like, I cannot stand that argument, you know, talking about like the movie industry and all. Well, that's the way it's always been. And well, yeah, because the way that it always used to be was men ran everything.
Yeah, I was watching Betty White, like, because her 97th birthday came,
mm-hmm.
was a couple days ago. Happy birthday, Betty White.
De-doop.
And I was watching just some of her old stuff. And the way that it was set up, like, she was the wife who was nagging her husband. And I was thinking, from like the 60s or something, and I was like, if she was born like 50 years later, like what kind of comedy would she be doing?
Oh my gosh.
Like today, like if she, like when she was like in her 20s, if she was doing comedy, like it would not have been in that format.
No.
At all.
No.
Yeah.
Well, like you look at Laverne and Shirley as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, you got to think at that time, it's a show where it's two women that are the title characters,
mm-hmm.
and this is super progressive, and like this is like feminism, and like here we are, and you look at some of the plots. and some of the jokes and sexual assault being played as a joke. And Penny Marshall, you know, she's a with it woman. You know, she gets it. But it's, you know, like you were talking about with the face mask, I would have been outspoken. I'd have been this. I wouldn't have let them run me. I'd have showed them. But when it's group thought, societal standards, societal norms that we all feed into and play into and say, it's okay. And it was not that long ago. That's why it takes such work. Women and children were meant to be seen and not heard.
Yeah. Or do like very important work, like they had a few movies out recently about women doing things behind the scenes, specifically in like computer.
Oh yeah, with NASA.
With NASA, mm-hmm. and just really like being the backbone of certain things, and then just having no real credit.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And another thing,
no one would believe that a woman had done it anyway.
Yeah, and they were talking about Watson and Crick, who supposedly found the DNA structure mm-hmm. or whatever, and. I can't remember the exact joke, but it was something to the effect of like, Crick is getting his Nobel Peace Prize or something taken away, or I'm getting the prize completely wrong. Anyway, he's getting some award taken away because he's a racist. And like, what did he find? It was like, what did he find? I don't know, so-and-so's notes. It was like a woman. There was a woman. They used her paper to get the structure of the idea of the structure of DNA from the woman, and then used it. But there's no repercussions. There's no repercussions back then.
Because exactly. And once again, they would have laughed in her face. You did not do this.
Yeah, and
you
same thing.
You did not do this, like, sweetie.
Yeah, like Marie Curie. She has two Nobel. I'm getting the thing wrong. She has two prizes that are very big prizes mm-hmm. that I can't seem to think of the right name for. And one, she got co with her husband. And then the second one, they like didn't want to give to her. It took a while, but they mm-hmm. find, you know, but she wasn't put up for it, or wasn't like given a lot of the respect she deserved because she was a woman. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just like how female comedians weren't funny and how people still feel that way. That's a whole other side note, but that cracks me up too. It's like you think about women, you know, how they used to think just women aren't funny. And I feel like there were some men that really did think, I don't get it. This isn't funny. But it's because stand-up comedy is about perceptions of the world and how I walk through it and how I have to live in it. And as a white man, yeah, you may not think my shit's funny because you cannot relate to what I'm saying. None of the, you know, like, it's like how I was so surprised that people actually say bagel.
You know what? You know, that's a low blow. Okay.
I'm so sorry.
I grew up in Northern Michigan and I learned to say bagel. Okay. I have been trying very hard since I moved to New York 10 years ago to say bagel.
You got it now.
My goal, that is my bay. Yeah. I am seeing a bagel as, I probably said it wrong again. Bagel. Bagel?
Bagel.
Bagel. Bagel.
No, not that way.
All right. You know what?
Anyway, but so.
I can't believe you brought that up.
I feel betrayed. I'm so sorry.
Okay. That will be it for today. But please tune in for our next podcast where we will be talking with a man.
You guys can check out our website.
PeopleIssuesPodcast.com.
Yes. And you can go to the Instagram page. People_issues_podcast. And you can email us at peopleissuespodcast@gmail.com. All right, everybody. Well, have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.